next problem is, any married, Paul, anybody else on the, okay, trying to get a perspective. I obviously can see which is male and female, although not herself, for that. Okay, for those that haven't been around for a while, there are two kind of interesting papers you might be interested in reading. Some of you may have picked this up from somebody else a couple weeks ago. It was A Single Person's Identity. And it kind of has a religious tint to it, but not entirely. And you might pass that around and look at the other one. And my idea of talking not just to singles, if anybody else wanted to listen, although I'm primarily interested in discussing mutual kinds of problems in the single world, is by Margaret Mead. And it's called What Singles and Married Couples Should Know About Each Other. And, you know, you can either take Margaret Mead or leave her. But she has some interesting kinds of things, I think, to say. And I think it is kind of interesting in terms of how the world has changed. And so if any of you want to kind of be looking at that, I've taken a few of just beginning comments from there. And then I thought what we really need to do is to discuss more than my presenting anything except a beginning kind of framework. I think I probably got the idea of singles in a couple's world when I began to look around pretty many years ago. And looking around in a very dismal sort of way, that Noah's Ark wasn't really far from us, that we do go two by two, as Margaret Mead talks about, or fours, or sixes, or eights, but not so much one, threes, five, sevens. For an illustration of this, is any of you can go in any restaurant that doesn't have booths, and you will find primarily four seats, two seats. If one comes, it's for a seat for two. If three comes, there's usually a fourth that is empty, or you've drawn up a chair or whatever. Years ago, when I first began going to dinners of any variety, the dinners were two, four, six, and eight. At the University of Maryland, they really haven't quit much, and the faculty dinners and parties are two, four, six, eight. Very convenient for the hostesses that there's some guy, 41 years old, who I can't stand, that I'm always with, because when they have dinner parties, they just can't seem to be able to have five, seven, nine. But there has to be somebody for George and someone for Joanne, and George and Joanne do not like each other at all. I can't. He is in charge of equipment, and he doesn't like to give us equipment, and I can beat him in tennis, and he doesn't like that. But we are thrown together, and I think that in lots of kinds of ways it can be duplicated, which in a sense starts in a negative, but I think the whole idea of it, and particularly in this generation, that we don't really need to see singleness at all as a negative, but a very positive. A very positive for either 1, 2, 5, 10, 20, or a lifetime. Much more, I think, than in the past. Margaret Mead talks about in her article that the singles are really taking over the American culture. That in the years past, they were either hidden in the closet, they were living with their families, or they were somewhere not seen, or being protected by somebody, someplace, or else they were teaching in school and were too tired at night for anything else. But that in the present society, let me give the figures to you, I think it's significant that between the 60s and 70s, the population as a whole increased about 16%. The population of unmarried increased 38%, twice as much within the same period. Divorced and widows increased by 34%. And in 1970, over half of the singled unmarried, either by choice or as a mismatch or mismarriage or divorced, widowed, or whatever, over half of the singles are under 35 years of age. And so that there were, in 1970, approximately 20 million Americans outside the conventional expectations of people in their age group, all of them over being the 21-year group. So that if there's any power in numbers, we are beginning to have numbers. And I think this has a very positive kind of ring to it. Whether it means that people are getting married later, which Margaret Mead argues is in fact the case, or if there are many more divorces, which we know, of course, is also the case, and also that particularly men in the business world, although we're moving in quickly by wanting to be in the labor force, where women are increasing their chances of a heart attack, just like the men are, and as we become executives, we're increasing our chances of dying young, just like the executive men are. So sometimes when we want equality, that's one of the equalities that's beginning to show. But at any rate, the women are still outliving the men. And so in this sense, there are a great number more single folks than married folks. And so I thought it might be worth discussing. You might also be interested to know in terms of those of you who are singles and with expectations of marriage, which for a normal kind of group this size would be probably 85% of those of you who are single will be married. And I have some things to say to you when you are married, but also in the process, those who wait between the ages of 28 and above to marry, you have three times as much chance of success in your marriage than had you married between 18 and 26. Now what happens to those 2 years in between? I don't know. But that's how maybe you lie with statistics or something. But I think it's a very logical reason for it and very sort of worth discussing. I think probably at 28, had I married at 28, I would have undoubtedly I had a good marriage in terms of the present generation of males, more than the generation of males I knew in the 50s. This generation of males at least have heard of this thing called equality of the sexes. Now, you still have had backgrounds that are inhibiting to you, but many, many more men of 30 and below are willing to at least look at a woman that's professional woman as a possibility as a marriage partner. There is possibilities of discussing no children, a possibility of discussing one or two children in which you are going to be equal in your roles as father, mother, mother, father, and interrelated. And I think at least this opening frees a lot of women of professional natures, such as I probably was, to look at marriage in a more serious kind of way. And I think that's one of the advantages, certainly, of this generation. But I think for singles, even greater advantage is the freedom that single people are beginning to have. And what I'd like to talk about today is some ways of educating the rest of society to sort of fall into our 38% and to remember that I see really no need in categorizing us as singles, married, couples, divorced. We are far more heterogeneous, certainly, than male-female. We are far more near my male physical educating companion than I am to a single school teacher of fourth grade English, for example. That and those of you that are in any kind of career, you really relate much more in relation to your profession. I really have been completely unable to find the difference between a married skier and an unmarried skier in terms of enjoying the slopes. So I think that we are categorizing very strangely. I see no difference between a married bridge player and an unmarried one, unless they're playing as partners. And then I see lots of problems with married couples on the bridge table. But basically, I don't see single and married as a kind of category that really needs to be made. But it's much more a category of single, I mean of individuals, human beings, rather than that we label them. And I think this is probably one of the main things to think about as a single is, how do you label yourself? How do you perceive yourself? Are you thinking as an existing? We talked about in the women's section last week. Do you think of yourself as a, and this is for women and men, I don't really know the equivalent of the categories, but for women, I see A, old maid, B, spinster, 3, unclaimed jewel, or 4, a unique individual. And I think as you look at it, and here's my definition between old maid and spinster. The old maid is one who's never been asked, and the spinster had a chance to say no. In terms of matrimony.
Dirty old man and playboy.
Okay, for the men we have what?
Dirty old man and playboy.
Right, dirty old man and playboy, professional man. He has been so busy about his profession that he hasn't had time to select a wife. And that's the most appropriate for the men that I have found. If they're any place between 28 and 35 and they're getting ahead professionally, then they're not dirty old men yet and they're not playboys. They're just getting ahead in the dog-eat-dog world. And so in lots of ways, or they're a bachelor. They can be a bachelor. Now, a woman might be a bachelorette, but then that's identifying and, you know, trying to fit us into another kind of category. I see both the male and the female having some of the same problems in self-image. The male perhaps gets a little more freedom because you don't have as many people saying, poor dear, wasn't asked. Instead, they say, the guy doesn't have any guts. And they still put it in some kind of category. But it really is significant whether I'm living as, I see the old maid as either living with family much too long, and I'm very much against this, for any length of time, for any single person. And lots of parents don't like to hear this, but one of the values I see of college, if nothing else happens, is that you get away from home. Lots of them see it as a matrimonial center, but I think we're getting a little wiser than that. But I think that the old maid is protected. Now, you're not gonna have as many nervous breakdowns, you're not going to have as many psychosomatic diseases, but you're not going to have as much fun either in terms of the living. The spinster is existing. I see both the old maid and the spinster as existing. And then I see you might as well be married rather than wishing you were. You might as well pick up somebody and marry him if that's really the expectations. And of course, that's what you've been grounded in. You know, you really haven't been grounded in the neat single life. You've been grounded in a family and in an idea that when you get married, you will get Auntie Mamie's silver, you'll get grandmother's whatever, and you'll get grandfather's watch, mister, for your first boy as soon as you're married. But until that, A, you're no good as a risk. You men are a terrible risk for car insurance. If you're not married, your car insurance up till 25 goes up. If you want to be a nice single pastor, you can just about forget it for the parish. Because somehow or other, you can't preach right without a wife. You know, it's just...
Unless you're Catholic.
Well, right.
And that's the other way around.
Yeah, and right. And I think in terms of serving the church, that's one of the ways that certainly the single can, in fact, in an awful lot of ways, serve, be committed as one of the responsibilities, the priest and the nun. For example, we're finding some very difficult times for nuns who are now trying to live in the real world. You had a nice protective wall as a nun when you had the outfit. But now as they take the havoc off, we're finding many, many nuns with many, many problems. And it's the problem that I see it as the problem society presses in on the nun more than the nun being, as it were, to blame if there is such a thing. The same with the priest are having this same difficulty. I play tennis with Father Joe as a partner, and he was talking one day about the difficulties he's beginning to encounter as a single man in the world when he doesn't have his collar on, but it's a lot different. He's 35 years old, and he's got to be the dirty old man because he doesn't quite fit the playboy sort of role, and it was very clear to me what society sort of does in this kind of a world. The unclaimed jewel type, I think, is the one, or the man who's always thinking about, when I get married, I will settle down and do this or this or this, and we will do. I think the unclaimed jewel is the most difficult one to work with in our society. It's the easiest one to still be looking. It was a lot easier 10 years ago when I went home and said, it was never, you know, how was your job? How is your profession? I get a new job in Maryland. Everything's different. Well, what's the mail situation there? I don't know. I haven't had time yet at Christmas. So it gets easier, though. Pretty soon you have all these defenses lined up, you know, like as I was telling somebody, I didn't know the last one that asked me was going to be the last. Or, are you too particular? Yeah, I'm too particular. Never, you know, no. Absolutely no fathom of. I've sort of gotten over the desire. That really is taboo to say very much out loud in terms of the marriage, not the male. But that's true. That doesn't, you know, that's biological. But the real desire to, now I'm really thinking I should really wait until I spend all this money I'm making before I'm going to share it. But it's something that our society doesn't really let us think about. And then I think more significant than anything else to all of us is the pressure that society is pushing. And to be sure that the unclaimed jewel doesn't make you exist instead of live. And I had a roommate for about 6 years who did everything in the sense that she wanted to do all of the, she really wasn't interested in teaching school. As I said, I wanted to teach school all my life, but I didn't want to teach school all my life in it. And she was really ready to settle down, but she went to Europe. She did all kinds of things first. She knew who she was. And at 21, she didn't know who she was. And I think this is where the 28-year-old marriages begin to bear fruit of self-discovery. And that if there's anything in singleness, it is having to make some kind of an adjustment with yourself in life. And that it is because, in some ways, of the pressure that we are able to do this. The fourth one of the unique individual, I think that you just about have to be a unique individual as a single in this world. That you are either an adjusted, unique individual, or you are unhappy because of the pressures that society has put on us. Fortunately, as I see it, in the college setting, I see many, many more girls and fellas saying, there's really no big hurry. And I see it as a very positive thing for the self and for, eventually, in many cases, the marriage. That you have found out who you are first, before you rush off to find out who you are together. Because if you then find out separately that what you are doesn't fit what she is or he is, then that's where we're finding, what, 50% of the California marriages, you have a good chance of ending it. And I think some of this is this. Even worse, I think, is this 18-year-old who is escaping. And all she does is move from mother and father to escape to John to escape, who is also escaping from something. So I think these young marriages are pressure marriages. I think 21-year-old after college marriages have an awful lot of pressure marriage as a part of it, and that it's this idea of two by two that forms an awful lot of it. I was talking about this one day, and somebody said, oh, but the Bible says about singleness. And finally, and I couldn't find it today, I got through that Paul place, You know what it is, Paul, where Paul says it's really better to stay single unless you're so sexed up that you need to be married. He says it very nicely, but anyway, I meant to find it, because when people start using the Bible, either for the divine order, which leaves me as a second-class citizen, which is a whole nother subject, or you mean you're not going to get married? Why, it says in Genesis. Yeah, but Paul of all people says that you get married if you really need to. Now, you can go back and study the section, and what it really is saying is Paul thinks maybe the second coming is soon, and that if you spend 6 months getting acquainted with a wife, you're committed to that instead of the work of the church, and it's probably the idea of Catholicism, too. But it is, at least Paul recognizes that singleness is not in and of itself a bad thing if we need some kind of biblical excuse for singleness. I really don't anymore, but I did. And that's probably when I found it, was when I did. As I also did need an awful lot of reasons for being single. And up until someplace, 32 seemed to be the magic age. And after that, I quit being the unclaimed jewel and all of these things, and being pretty realistic with myself on whether I would or I wouldn't marry, in a sense. But I think that in the single world, however, there are some things that are not positive, but I see freedom, travel, and the freedom to give to couples as a very important kind of contribution. Now, what I'd like to do is to list what I see is some of our positive and negatives, and then to begin to interchange on some of your views in it. As I said, I see the freedom, the chance to choose my profession, to do my profession, to be committed to my profession as a very positive. I see my travel experiences as great for me. I see what I can contribute in my profession to be more than 50% of my life. I also have an opportunity, which I think we sometimes don't think of having very many, many close friends. Things and time that I would not have if I were in a married situation. It's one of the most positives, as well as, of course, being one of the most negatives. I think we maybe by nature would like to cling, not just females, but males too. But if we are willing to get our 100% of love, as it were, in the sense of friendship love as opposed to intimacy love, from a large number, or at least a greater number of people, that our potentials and our various kinds of personality can be filled. There's no question in my mind I could not have as many close friends, as many couple friends, as I have if I were married. That much of my percent, 25-30%, would go to the one individual. And I don't know which came first, having a lot of friends so you don't get married, or you don't get married so you need a lot of friends. And I don't think it's important, you know, which way it happens to be. But I find that I have a lot of close friends of a lot of varieties. And this article talks about male friends and the importance of female and male friends. And I think that this is one of the enriching portions of my life. If any of you have been to Concordia, you might bump into a guy named Ralph Hoppe. And Ralph Hoppe is my male friend that fits me exactly. He has no physical skills of sports, and I don't have any competitive world with him. We have a literary and a funny world. And we have been really close friends for many, many years. We have excellent friendship and commitment to one another at a distance and as close, and spending time together without the intimacy. And I am sure that it's one of the great friendships that are possible in male and female. And I think it's absolutely necessary in a single world. I think it's also one of the good things that single women can have is friendships with one another. Male ones can have it with one another. Obviously, in this new homosexual world, we have some difficulties with two males enjoying one another's company, and I think that's what's great about this place, where everybody is really free without labels. And it's a label just as bad as a single label, but it's a label we have to recognize as existing in our society as we live as singles in it. and merely deal with it rather than discussing it in its sense. So I see friendship as one of the very positive parts of a single world. I see my relationship with couples as I enrich children's lives, but I also get rid of them when I don't want them. And it's a great thing, you know. I can take them for 3 hours to the circus and they think I'm the greatest thing in the whole world. And you can call it sublimation or whatever you want. But the kids love it and I love it. And it's an opportunity that I think we can give to a family, and letting families go away, and we have borrowed their children, as it were. And I have lots of children that I borrow from time to time. We really had a big chunk the other day when we took 2 6-year-olds up to the basin. But it made us sort of lifelong friends when you get them across that snowfield. We might have not been bright, but we're friends from it. Actually, there are 3 of us that are good climbers with it. But this is one of the reasons I probably love Holden. The Collins children who just left, I see both the children and the parents as really good friends. And that this is one of the really enriching things that Margaret Mead talks about. And I think you fellas really have a better chance at that, because wives feel much sorrier for you and invite you to dinner and you get a chance at their children. Women are far more threatened by us than males seem to be threatened by single men. And so you guys get much better dinners than we do, I know. And I think it's something you have to look at in terms of professional women. One of my ways of judging, for example, with males that I play tennis with, is if when I meet the wife, she doesn't give me this blank stare but says, oh yes, you're the one who plays tennis, then I think, well, maybe I can move in that family a little bit. But if she stares at me and has never heard of me, then I trot right back out, because that's not a stable enough couple. I think to be 3 in a couple or with a couple, that there has to be a stability and a real commitment in the marriage before the third party walks in it. And I think it's something you need to think about. Some of you might be interested in reading Open Marriage. Not that I'm asking for the kind of open marriage that you're thinking about, but the book isn't about that. Unfortunately, they're divorced, which crushed me to the very core that this open marriage book, the authors are now divorced. But it's a very good one in terms of setting up sort of criteria for yourself on stable couples that you can relate with, both the husband and the wife, or even mostly the husband, if there's some things that you like better. But that the threat, that you're always a threat, or maybe to the female, is also important to think about. Some way or other, married couples forget that they were single, which is something that I think we can remind married couples about. Hey, remember, you were single too. And we were talking last time about being friends of one or the other, and the friendship sort of disappears. Well, my rule of thumb sort of is give them 6 months alone and then reestablish any kind of relationships that they really are. Romantic love is really exciting, and they have to get to know each other. And then the third party is not a good way of getting to know somebody else. But once the marriage, for example, is set, and you are a friend of the male or you are a friend of the female, it's up to you to reestablish it unless you have qualms. And then I think you have to look at yourself about why am I afraid to reestablish it? Or if she is, does marriage really make us suddenly 2 different human beings without similar interests? Does your interest, professional interest, or whatever it was that drew you together, suddenly separate you? I found in talking to women whose husbands have died, their interests haven't changed at all. But suddenly, for 6 months, everybody invites them with all the goings on. And then suddenly, slowly, they quit. And it's like the woman or the man who lost his wife suddenly doesn't have anything in common. And I think it's the society pressures that we have sort of let happen. So what I'd like to do now is pick up any one of these things I've talked about and ask questions or comment from your own experience or in any of the areas of singleness, how you might move in with the married couple kind of society, whether you think we ought to be in a separate society, or any kind of comment or question on it. any reaction to it. Yeah.
Well, I read a really good article in a magazine. I don't know what it was, but it was on, it was a survey given couples, or no, survey given single people. And it had, it was like a questionnaire, like if there was a really good movie in town that you hadn't seen and there was no one that was around to go with you, would you go by yourself? Or if there was someplace you really wanted to go and it couldn't be arranged to go with someone, would you go there by yourself, like on a vacation? Or if there was someplace you really wanted to go and it couldn't be arranged to go with someone, would you go there by yourself, like on a vacation? And then it had a little summary and it said, which I thought was really good, a lot of people feel that being single is kind of being on hold before you're married because society has, you know, has made marriage such a thing. And the article didn't put down being married or anything, you know, not wanting to get married, which I agree. If it happens, it happens. If you find that it's for you and it's the right time, then you'll find that. But it said how people kind of temporarily put their life on hold, and like some people, you know, don't go to church or they wait to do certain things because they'll do it later when they're married, when they have a family. Then they'll bring their kids to Sunday school. Or they don't get involved in things that are going on. Not that you have to get involved in everything, but that possibly thinking of being single as a way of life will also involve you more and will help you, quote, pass the time if you're thinking that you really want to get married. And how important it is to, you know, to really get in there and to be happy with yourself, because you can miss out on some of the best times of your life if you don't, you know, grab for what you have.
Other comments in this line of the...
Well, I'd like to make a comment on what you said about growing up before you're 28 and traveling and stuff like that, because, like, I took off last fall with a girlfriend of mine. She was a nurse, and we left our families and went without any tent or anything. We camped for 3 months throughout Canada and the United States, and I left with $95. And all the people that said, oh, you're so lucky, the majority was married women. I envy you. I wish I had done that before I got married. And everybody kept saying to me, your folks, what do your folks think about that? My mother was so much for it. And she's a great, my folks get along fine, but my mother was so much for it. And there were people who practically, you know, your mother's for it. They didn't feel that was right. And it's not, you know, like I'm underage or anything like that. And it was an experience, I mean, of that I would never, ever give up for anything.
Yeah, I think sometimes parents, of course mine are even farther removed than most of yours in terms of tradition, but they absolutely took for granted when I finished college, if I hadn't found a man, why else would you be in college, says father. Why are you spending all that money for Jim? I mean, he just could not fathom that it could turn into any sort of money-making affair, this education. Now he sees it as a pretty good deal. But and everybody in the church just took for granted that Joanne will go to college and she'll come back to Gary, Indiana and squat and live at home and teach. And there was just, it was very difficult to convince my parents that it's a new lifestyle, and particularly in the 50s, because it wasn't. It was still 2x2 into Noah's Ark then, or else. And it was even more serious about going to shows, going to anything as a single person. I only have one really big, what I call, thing left, and that is Saturday night. It is very difficult for me to pick up my toys and go to dinner by myself. I can go to dinner, I can do anything. So there's something left in me of, you know, this little wheel that's going around saying Saturday night is date night and you aren't going to go with the girls, because in the first place there aren't any 40-year-old girls left. and certainly a lot of them that I really don't enjoy being with, their Saturday night is spent in a group in alcohol primarily, which is one of the problems, by the way, or chances that you're taking as a single person from the pressures of society. For women, suicide and alcoholism, and for males, suicide. Only successful suicides. Single men have the highest suicide success rate. Women have lots more tries, but they're not really, evidently, trying to make the scene. But you men are successful, so you be careful in the tries. You also, by the way, are going to die young. Women, single women, die older than married ones. Single men die younger. So, and yet it seems like they are surviving better than single women in a lot of the looks. But evidently, they really aren't in terms of the society. Yeah, go ahead.
I have another comment, and it's two kind of, and that is I've sung for gobs and gobs of weddings, and a lot of my friends' parents are, oh, Steffi, we've got to find a nice guy for you. And I just about, you know, and the other one is throw her the bouquet. Throw her the bouquet. I think I've got at least 31 bouquets.
One of the things I think you can be thinking about as a single is I used to think that awful lot of self-pity, loneliness, or tears. The difference is, I think, that we have a longer freedom for tears in a whole evening. And the woman's got to get her crying over with in a shorter time because she's got the married woman in terms of things to do. I sort of have a rule of thumb of 30 minutes for self-pity and an hour if it's really sad. And it has a very therapeutic kind of effect. And I found as the years go, that as loneliness turns into this solitude idea, that I really enjoy myself and have discovered all kinds of enjoyable sorts of self kinds of things that I really like to do. And I also have learned the potential of the blues after a wedding, just because everybody is in this kind of pressure. I find that the end of a school year is a very down, because one of my commitments is to a profession, and all my failures are sitting there. And my greatest thought, besides that I have freedom for 6 weeks or whatever, is that I can start at least over in September. And that's one thing you married people can't do. You know, you can't start over, as it were, in September. That's what your vacations are supposed to do. But in my profession, I find it a very down at the end, and sort of ups. And the, maybe the older you get, the more you can predict them and deal with them. But I think one of the things is not looking across at the grass as greener. It may be greener with the right person, but with the wrong person, it's just not going to be greener. Somebody in the session the other day was talking about it's better to be single and know it than to be married and wish you were. And I think that this is one of the things one kind of thinks about. Other kinds of problems or ways of dealing or questions in terms of the single world and getting into the society or being more satisfied with oneself that you have found or questions about how one deals with something. I mean, you're all experts in this that are single because you're living it. Any kinds of thoughts? No thoughts at all?
One thing, you know, like on our staff, there are two of us who are single and everybody else is married, our department staff, and the single person and I can decide at 4:25 that we're going to be out over at a golf course at 5:00. You know, there's just sort of that freedom to not have to go home and make a meal or check out with somebody that you don't have other plans. I don't know, I couldn't imagine having somebody around all the time. They drive me right to the wall.
Yeah.
My secretary's husband said here a couple months ago, Lois, we don't know how well off you are. Which my secretary replied, oh yes, Lois is one person who does well.
Yeah.
Another comment I've heard on that is as far as single people, you know, their independence and freedom, all that, is that they're self-centered and selfish, you know, like they do anything they want, and so they're not concerned, you know, about other people. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that I definitely have a greater potential for selfishness by the way I live. Because I do what I want to do sort of when I want to do it. But I think it has to do with where you have accepted the responsibility. I see what I have as responsible freedom. And one of the freedoms is to eat hot dogs, hamburgers for a month if I want to, or to do anything I want. Also, I think there is a problem of, what's Carol always talking about, checking your spiritual something with like the lint in your belly button or something. Anyway, that inner spectrum sometimes is true. So I think the potential for developing a lifestyle that is very self-centered is very real. But in that process, I think that the potential for also giving and taking and sharing, that the freedom of that is also just as great. And I've seen an awful, terribly lot of selfish men or selfish women. I think probably I observe the husband maybe more in talking to the wife. And because he's gotten away with being selfish in this whole society. And I think probably my potential, you know, is greater. And I also have found that I get set in various kinds of ways. But I've also gone into some pretty sterile kinds of homes that have this same kind of thing. But we definitely do have more freedom. But I think we therefore have more opportunity to give, too. We also have more chance of being used if we let ourselves. Jim?
Yeah. Well, I think something a person can do when they're single is, say you end up getting married at 28 or something like that. I think a person has a chance to work out their... to deal with themselves, to deal with their personal problems or any kind of you have a chance to mature, to deal with yourself, to deal with frustrations and so forth, so that when you do get married, I think if you have handled yourself properly while you were single, have a potential for being a better spouse. You have a chance to learn, you know, instead of throwing all your problems on somebody else, you have a chance to learn how to deal with them yourself. so that you can maybe not frustrate the partner so much. Oh, there's something to be said for working out problems together.
Well, the studies show that there's some reason why the 28 ones are working. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to go along with that and say that sometimes it's easier to give yourself away or give of yourself after you have, to a certain extent, you know, found what you have. You get to the point where you know your abilities and know what you can do and how you will react to things, and you can give yourself away. And along with the thing about some single people maybe tend to be more selfish, I think that's true. I think I've seen just extremes in the single world. Either people who are kind of inward and who are maybe not concerned with other people as much, and also people who are extremely giving. I have an aunt that is the only single one in a large family, but she's in her 50s and has just done so many marvelous things at the same time for herself as well as other people. And she took a long period kind of getting to know herself, and since then she has felt so good about it that, you know, she's tried to help other people. And she's really enjoyed her life.
Yeah, I think probably 10 years ago I was far more selfish than I am today. I think it took me longer to know myself, which was a period of, you know, too bad for everybody else while I'm getting to know that. But now I really feel that my selfishness is in tiny things that really aren't as important, and that money things and these kinds of things are not particularly significant to me. I'd rather give, in a lot of cases, I'd rather give people my money than my time. Lois?
I'm as selfish as them. You know, you think, okay, you know, you get your paycheck, I get my paycheck. If I want to go out and blow money, fine. I don't have kids to buy shoes for and all this kind of thing. Sure, if you're a married person and you have children, obviously you have to spend your money on somebody else. But just remember, too, as a single person, we're probably spending just as much money on that in the government because they take out that nice big chunk. But even though a married person may spend that money on the kids, you don't know what fights are going in there for the wife to get the money from the husband. You know, I've seen more selfishness in married men who are wage earners. You know, it's my money and here's $10 for groceries this week. You know, and they have all their pursuits. They got the best fishing tackle in the garage or maybe in their bedroom. They got everything they want. And yet that person is supposed to be so selfless with his gifts as compared to I do out and $100 on payday if I want, I'll take the consequence. I don't have to answer anymore.
Yeah, I think if you want to look at us in that way, that it can look selfish. You can also see kids whose the mother has lived through the child so selfishly, won't release the child. Neither is right. So, you know, we can't do life on a comparative basis. The potential for selfishness is in all of us because we've got egos. And if we didn't, we'd be in, you know, deep sort of trouble anyway. And I think it's how we use whatever role we are in is, you know, that we could line up as many selfish married women, selfish married men, selfish singles. There's more married people, so maybe we can line up more in a sense of them. Do you have a comment? Oh, I thought the bottom one. Other comments or questions on any of it as either a positive or a negative or functioning in the couple world in difficulties or ways that you have found is workable? I see the church as a very negative in my life. They have a singles club, which stinks. There's some very interesting women in it, and maybe one interesting guy who's got all the 25 interesting women in it. I have found, for your own value, and it's not... I have found the very best groups for me is, in terms of as a single person, is going to the parties and the gatherings of... parents without partners. Those are the neatest guys of the ones that I have bumped into. Of course, where I pick up my child is something else, but I have found them more amenable and more professional kinds of men in it than I have found in any of the single groups. I've also tried data computing, and it's interesting, but not very future. I've tried the bar routine, and I don't find those very good. But in the church group, I have found there's a singles club, there is a couples club in our church, and I really don't see in terms of the people that are in it. They are mostly university men, and the wives may or may not be in terms of their roles. But I see my interest far more with this married couples club, and I can cook hamburger hash as well as anybody else, but it is a couples club. Now, it's just the last year that I dared approach the pastor on what was sacred in the couples club. And he said, oh, it's not, but it's called the couples club. And so it is. They have a fellowship club, which is a bridge club. And that is, if everything else fails and they can't find anybody else, well, why don't we call Joanne and maybe she can play bridge or whatever. There's two of us that are on the substitute list that are single, a fella and myself. Or better yet, boy, if there's two, then we'll also have John. And John is an absolutely great bridge player, period. And so, you know, this is, and I think that's partly our fault for not, if we're interested in being a part of the group. But one thing they love to have me do is to call me up every year to ask me about Sunday school teaching. Well, one of my freedoms, and this is the selfish part of me, is that I don't have to do something on a weekend. Mother has to do something. Mothers have to get their kids to Sunday school anyway. So in a sense, I think that's the least thing I want to do is teach Sunday school. But I always get called for Sunday school. Even the Lutheran circle group is married women. And I really don't see what they talk about in this kind of sense that's strictly related here. And I think this is left from our couple kind of world or children. Now, there's a lot of times I don't want to talk about diapers, and so I don't want to go to those groups. But they have a lot of good Bible studies that I hear about in the couples club that I can't see that I'm living so differently. You know, I pay my rent, I have my apartment, I've got my dishwasher, I've got all the neighbor kids to worry about, I've got about my patio with all my junk going to disappear, and so I don't see my problems as being much different from the couple that live right next door, except the next door couple have fights that I don't get to fight with, in a sense. But I really don't see that much difference if I want to do it. Now, a lot of singles who are living in a professional world might not be interested in it. But there's also a lot of married couples that would like to know what's happening in some of the exciting kinds of single worlds. And I think that the church is far behind in just setting up categories of single married, as opposed to in a work interest group, some other sort of interest, literary group or whatever. Any experiences that you people find in terms of the church setting as a positive? Or the positive I see at my church is a chance to find the children that I can take to the circus. And I have two or three couple friends that I have met with and have finally been at some Bible studies where they've really had some good kinds of Bible studies, which I really don't think I've interfered with the effectiveness of their Bible study by being a single in the married group. And one other single now has been sort of in it. But, you know, I see our problems, and in the professional world, is pretty much the same. I do see one major problem happening to women, professional women, that hasn't happened in the past, and that's that we are beginning to be a threat to men that we weren't before in the professional world. Now, I was never a threat to men in the Department of Physical Education for years, because a female was never head of the men and the women's Department of Physical Education. And 3 years ago, the head of our department went up to dean, and there was an opening. And according to the new rules, you know, in discriminatory action, you got to try to get a female in it. And I found many change, just subtle kinds of changes in attitude when I could well have been a candidate for this, which puts pressure on a single that hadn't been there. Because then you're no longer poor dear for the man, but you're a threat for his job. just as now they can't look at the single man and say, oh, you don't want to be head of the department, that's $25,000, what would you do with it? I've got a wife and four kids. And these two things, I think, are subtle changes, and for the female particularly, it really is a different world when we begin to threaten the wage earner. And that this has interfered with some of my very good kinds of rapport professionally. And as you women decide you don't want to be a secretary, you want to be the boss, you're doing all the work anyway, it begins to have an effect. As the male began to move into the telephone companies, they found many kinds of problems in the DC area, where in the past you only had to worry about them as linesmen. Now when you have to worry that their voices are really better for the telephone, there began to be some threatening kinds of things. In nursing, we're finding some threatening kinds of things happening in terms of the male nurse, who really, in lots of ways, they're stronger. They really are fitted in some ways better than we are, and certainly in therapy, in physical therapy. I was talking to a gal who was head of the physical therapy department, and she really didn't want men coming into the program. And when you got right down to it, there was no good logical reason, except she was fearful that he then would become the boss. And so you're finding some vocational pressures, which is kind of changing in the society, which also then affects the husband-wife couple. If I'm threatening you two jobs, then the wife, who maybe had good rapport, suddenly has some rapport kinds of problems. You sort of, you were sort of shook your head, about the professional.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What are you finding?
No, I've just found in the last few years, especially since Women's Lib, the more I get together with my own talents and myself and open up, I find more men that are frightened of that than accept it. I think it's just the whole climate in the country, even as a teacher, men are very defensive. I mean, it's scary. It's harder. It's like the more I open up, the more they run. It's kind of a problem.
Yeah, I think it is a transitional world, and I think the exciting thing, as far as I can see, is that you're going to make what the world's going to be in terms of whether it's going to stay a two-by-two kind of thing, if it's going to stay male against female almost now. You know, it is a problem in terms of the present of the whole women's lib. As soon as you say women's lib, when really what you mean is a single career person who has a chance for the same job as a single or a married career person, that word can, you know, send us all into a kind of orbit on it. Nancy?
I get really disgusted, Joanne, with myself and with other single women, you know. And I put myself probably at the top of that category in not seeing the value of striving for a really good full life, single or married, whichever. I think it's so easy to feel that because I'm single it's not possible. You know, certainly it's possible to some extent, but because that one half of it's gone or something that's dragged you through and it just can't be the full life that it could be. And also with married, and I just figure that it's you're losing something by choosing to be married, or you're losing something by choosing to be single. Instead of just thinking about the personal life and really striving for the fullness and the enthusiastic interactions you can have with other people, regardless of what status you are. And along with that, the professional kind of thing, I get disgusted with the nursing profession, and that the few men that are coming into the nursing profession now are really doing good things for us, because they don't they're striving for higher salaries, for good job benefits, because they really need to have them because they're supporting wives and children. Whereas before, it's always the Florence Nightingale kind of thing, well, you're doing this out of a good deed, you know, you don't really want to be paid for your job, do you? And I really think that we're slow. And I think that I'm really going to get slow than anybody else.
I think probably part of that is...
Well, I just had one little comment, and that is, you mentioned the problem of when you compete against males, that they're threatened. And I think the only answer is for women to compete stronger. go after it, and then I think that's the only way to change.
Yeah, I think that's what Nancy is saying, is that we have, and but part of the problem, remember, is that we have been second-class citizens. We've been it in terms of the vote, we've been it in terms of the government, we've been it in terms of our salaries, and because it's a more secure position to be second class and cared for. I have difficulty with the nonsense that obviously because the male loves you, he's responsible to take care of you. Well, so I'm the female and I love the male, so I'm responsible to take care of him. They're really, and it's our culture. Since she was a little girl, she wasn't supposed to be as competitive, all of us. Now I think the generation can be cured, but the problem, you see, what the male can use, as soon as we do go after it, then the woman's lib comes up, and that you're doing it as a part of some dirty name, rather than as a human being to it. But I think that what we have to do is to decide within ourselves about, am I as good at teaching history of sport in Western society as a male is? And I have decided I am not only as good, but I am better because I have more little stories. And I'm willing to work at refining them. And so therefore, whatever he's getting for it, I should get for it. But you have to believe that you really are as good. And I do believe that in these kinds of areas. Now, as soon as I have to run a race, you know, strictly brute strength race, then I can't ask for as much money. A truck driver who has to deliver goods that weigh 100 pounds, we are inferior to them. Those are the two areas that you can have all the money in the world. And you're right, in everything else,